Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. You can listen and subscribe to the show for free on Spotify, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Audible. For network or show information, visit ByteRadio.me. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Gretchen Astro Turner, and we will be talking about her new book, But I Digress, Quirky Short Stories, and they are whimsical and zany, but edged with darkness, evocatively lyrical, with goosebump-eliciting endings. Gretchen's 13 short stories in But I Digress are for the romantic in all of us, but also the cynic. This fiction collection is for the surrealist and the dreamer, and is for those who live by carpe diem, those who love an addict or may be addicts themselves, members of the LGBTQ plus community, readers who are also into vampire lore, as well as those who know life may best be understood via metaphor and symbolism. A logophile and bibliophile with a Master of Arts in Teaching of English Language, Teaching English Language Art from Columbia University, Gretchen has also written a playful roadmap through storytelling and language. For more information, you can visit her website, which is godsagoodkisser.wordpress.com. And again, it's godsagoodkisser.wordpress.com, and there is no apostrophe in gods. So with that, I'd like to welcome Gretchen to the show. Good day, Gretchen.
Aw, thank you, Robert. I'm so touched and blessed and honored and thankful to be here. So thank you so much. It's heartwarming to hear you synopsize my book and get to be the center of attention for an hour like this to have people listening. I can't be more grateful. My hand is literally on my heart right now. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And I want to thank you for creating this forum to let people shine their lights and, again, bring inspiration to earth. There's nothing more that we're here to do than that, to bring more love, bring more inspiration. So I thank you. Credit goes to you to be aware of this and being an active agent in circulating the opportunities. So it reminds me of a quote, shine not so that people can see you, but so that through you they can see God or love or that unconditional energy field. So thank you for being someone who gets it and is providing that outlet, that channel, that instrument, this for us. So teamwork makes the dream work. So thank you.
I appreciate that. And you know, that's one of the joys of doing the show now for my 13th year is that I've had an opportunity to meet so many different types of people and different types of work that they have created, and yours is delightfully unique, and so I'm really looking forward to talking about it. So first of all, since we're talking about inspiration, what inspired you to write But I Digress?
So wonderful to start out question. The honest answer is there are 13 in here, and the decision to publish them was a more recent thing. About 3 years ago, I finally, to quote Dr. Wayne Dyer, who is one of my countless mentors and heroes, he kind of says about his work that he didn't want to die with his music still in him. He quotes the death of Ivan Ilyich, where Ivan on his deathbed is it's a cautionary tale, and Ivan is thinking, what if my whole life was wrong? When it's too late to have done something about it. So Dr. Wayne Dyer talks about how that was very pivotal for him to just live life on purpose, follow his heart, again, get his song out. So I finally prioritized the publication of them about 3 years ago. This book came out in actually synchronistically with cosmic mystical alignment. It happened, quote unquote, to be published on my birthday, September 29th. 2022, and I took about a year to finally get them all published. But the writing of them was, I don't want to say accidental, but what I was planning on publishing first is my poetry. I have a big manuscript of a ton of poems, probably 250 words at this point, but when I was going through my archive of poetry, I came across a number of these short stories that I had written and just were in obscurity and gathering shadowy dust. And I had forgotten I wrote a number of them. And when I was rereading them, I can sincerely say this isn't meant to be arrogant or haughty, supercilious, but I was in love with them. I was getting goosebumps as I read them. Called The Sitting Endings, and my jaw dropped as sort of a humble pat on my back to say, geez, Gretch, you have some amazing stories, and it's your duty to get them out there. So just like every artist that creates a work of beauty, if they didn't do what they needed to do to get it out there or have other people believing in them to do it, our world, our lives would be impoverished. I could, imagine if many of our favorite songs or books or movies never came into the public eye or never came into our hands or we never took them through our ears. I mean, this is what life is about, to give those gifts out. So when I discovered I had enough that were so compelling to me after truly having forgotten that I wrote a lot of them, mm-hmm. I said, wow, this has to come out first. So I set about not changing my weekends around and prioritizing this instead of a social life, and I'm mm-hmm. so grateful it comes to pass. So, yeah.
Well, that's good. Well, and it has to be delightful to have, go back and reread some of what you wrote and get that sense of elation, really, and in a way, it seems that break in time or the distancing, between writing and publishing created a, more of an objective kind of evaluation of them.
Precisely. The stories, I believe the first one that was written was 20-ish or more years ago, and then the latest one was just a few years ago, so it spans over 20 years or so. And another, just the honest answer about why I wrote some of the short stories and just about all of my poetry is, I used to be a romantic obsessive, just an addict when it came to relationships and love and crushing on people. And I was, I'm using this word compassionately, but broken for a while and had misguided need for completing myself through another person. And in my case, through an erotic, just romantic attachment to somebody, and I needed to kind of have someone there, to have someone to focus my passion on and my attention on. And what I loved nothing more to do was to write them love poetry. I wanted to woo them and seduce them and impress them and make them fall in love with me. And I would write these I don't know how to say the word. I should know, but paeans or kind of love poems to them. And many of the times it was a love story that I became inspired to write. So a bunch of these stories were me just trying to showcase my ultimate beauty, which was my writing to a certain muse that I was either falling in love with or saw the potential to fall in love with, and vice versa, him or her with me. So I wrote many of them to them. So it was never, I used to say, I just want to be famous in the eyes of one person. I just wanted that one person to see in me what I saw in them, by trying to create a masterpiece or the most beautiful thing I could come up with. And so some of these stories just came out. So that's, artists talk a lot about how inspiration, how it means in Latin, being in spirit. It's the breath of life coming through us being the instrument, us being the channel. All we have to do is get out of the way and uncork it. As a writer once wrote, like words waiting in a pen. So it's just a matter of letting it free, setting it free. It's not us.
Yeah,
we're just the vehicle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that, you know, that that desire, you know, for having that special someone, like the way you posed the broken, you know, kind of in the best way, that, you know, those,
exactly.
I mean, that is the, that's a thread through so, I mean, you can't hear a country song without, you know, having that come up, you know? So, to me, it's a, that desire is what, I think sparks, you know, writers and artists of all sorts to be able to, convey what they're feeling and what they're longing for. So, I mean, it seems like that's a, I wouldn't say prerequisite, but it's a basis for so much of artistic creation.
Beautifully, perfectly put. Exactly. It's a catalyst that just, that universal, like you say, the country songs or just so much of music or art in general is to that ideal of love. And we consecrate it, we pay homage to it, we, throw ourselves at the feet of it and just try to connect, to unite with this love that, in my experience, I've shifted. I'm a very different person than I was for those 20 years of when this particular, this set of art was created. And now a lot of the spiritual information of the Gayan, the wisdom of understanding that yoga, that desire, our yearning, our longing to unite with love, that universal urge is there because it is our spirit, our true nature of self, seeming to be disconnected in these three-dimensional forms from our eternal nature of love, of spirit with a capital S. And it's natural that we hunger to go back home and have that union, as yoga means, just to reunite with it, reconnect with it. And we're blessed to have myriad forms in this incarnation to feel love. When an eros and the romantic, erotic is one form and arguably one of the most potent ones because it comes with such sensual thrills attached to it, and even one of the primary drives of procreation is found in our whole capacity for orgasm and sense pleasure. But that's just one path and a beautiful one that we all can relate with. But what I'm learning now through the natural arc and trajectory of my life is to dissolve and expands into a wider, not framework, but a wider capacity and intrinsic kind of floating into just the simplicity of how much love and beauty is around us everywhere, not just in that attenuated, localized one channel mm-hmm. where it needed to be reciprocal love with the romantic muse. Now it's nature and pets and animals for me and food and friendships and just loving myself. As one of my heroes says, Anita Morjani, when we love ourselves, it makes everything else in life click and work. And it makes me just alive in the present moment, just so alive and wanting to connect with everyone and everything. Like, I'm brimming over with such gratitude and appreciation now and being fed by so many streams of this love. So this conversation with you is just the best thing right now. I finally watched the Fred Rogers movie the other day with Tom Hanks, which is a masterpiece, mm-hmm. but I never knew Mr. Rogers was such a sage and a saint and a rishi. And he said, you know, what's the most important thing in my life right now? It's this phone call with you. He realized the moment, just the moment is everything, what we bring to that moment. And we don't have to be a superstar. We just are alive and here and have the capacity for kindness. And that kindness is such a beauty and such a transaction of love. So here I am starting to get effusive with the way that I can when I thank you for bringing it out and being someone that I really have a kindred connection with and feel free to be myself with and share what makes me come alive.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the idea of, you know, superstars. Now, over the years, I have had many a guest who on the show that the first time they've ever, you know, either spoken about their book or done a podcast or anything like that, interviewed, was with me. And I treasure that. I just think that is so great because, you know, number one, I try to put people at ease so that, you know, hopefully if it's a first experience, it won't be one that they'll regret, you know, it's like, oh. But I've also noticed that, you know, and I've had several guests who, you know, are very high profile, you know, and what I seem to recognize through the, just through the variety is that the ones who are high profile, can sometimes be so cynical, lack authenticity, you know, and I'm sure it's because of, you know, they've done hundreds of interviews and da da da, you know, but the depth of the conversation, quite often is lacking. And you know, that's, and again, I'm sure that's probably a result of, you know, their journey and their experience. But when it comes to, you know, having guests on my show, you know, I actually tend to look to those with lesser, you know, profiles, than those who are higher profile. I mean, it's just, you know, and it's not that I, disregard, you know, those of higher profile. And basically the bottom line for me is, you know, is this going to be an interesting conversation with this person, you know, and do I, mm-hmm. you know, appreciate what it is that they've, you know, what they produced or what their journey has been. And so, so yeah, you know, when it comes to, you know, people being green around interviews, you know, those are my favorite.
I love how you put all that, and it's fascinating about how, like you say, some of the folks who have, it's not their first rodeo, may become a little jaded or take it for granted and become stagnant or lacking that freshness and effervescence. One of the attributes that I've recognized in some of my recent heroes that I find myself extremely drawn to and inspired by and wanting to emulate is how fresh and alive and real and authentic and excited and grateful they are every single time mm-hmm. they are interviewed. And because they have to rehash and say their story sometimes right. hundreds into thousands of times, and yet for many people listening, it will be the first time that their audience to it. And the I'm thinking of concretely Dolly Parton and Anita Morjani at the moment, but there are many, many that I consider heroes and role models and want to copy in terms of their poise and equanimity and, again, that effervescence with sharing as if it's the first time that they're sharing their story and being asked the same questions again and again. It is with such still a sparkle and that reverent gratitude that it's a transaction. They're so grateful that somebody is even wanting to chat with them and regard them as someone with helpful wisdom to share. And they haven't lost sight of how, what an honor and what a respect that is being paid to them to be put in that position. So I'm certainly on the green side. And I'd like to think that I'll remain this, effervescent and, champagne like Chablis popping all over the place, but I'm pretty, I see that. I don't think I'm ever going to be other than just who I am in the moment and who
right.
my friends know me to be, just so candid and honest and real. I'm kind of impossible to be phony or get take anything for granted, because I feel like I'm being born again just so much more so in life these days, especially on the note of inspiration and works that we're so grateful have come into our life. Catcher in the Rye is one of my favorite stories, and I always remember being struck by Holden, being dismayed by the phoniness, kind of like falling into the rye of phoniness and lack of authenticity. And even in high school when I first read that resonated, and that remains a hallmark and kind of clarion call that then continues to guide me on and resonate to just, God, life is meant to be loved and, like, suck down the marrow of it, as my best friend Ed always says, like, having, like, sucking, like, the sun is like a big orange and he wants to have it dribbling down his chin and suck every succulent bite out of it. And it's, sometimes I've felt, gosh, I have to chill out or calm my jets, because how effusive and in love with life I am is sort of not in alignment with how a lot of people are. And there's this weird energy where somehow we're made to feel guilty or ashamed or like, wow, I better not make people feel badly that they're not happy or something, you know. But I've had to disregard that line of thinking, because why would I be giving my power away to that consciousness? I'm just grateful for the chance to flower and bloom, and just like every beautiful plant or flower out there, they're going to grow and have their blooming time, and for their own sake, because it's their nature, not for how people are regarding them. But it just so happens to bring beauty and fragrance and pleasantness to others if they want to notice, you know.
So. Right. Well, you know, and it's good that you recognize, you know, the nature of your being, you know, in the liveliness and authenticity, and that other people, you know, if someone does not have that love of life, you know, that you know, it's good that you don't feel compelled to stifle yours, because, you know, it's, I know that, you know, through a lot of socialization that happens, that, you know, people may want to not, you know, for if someone's not, you know, loving life, you really don't want to make it worse for them, you know, so to speak, you know. But also, it's important not to buy into the misery loves company kind of mentality, you know, of, you know, let me go ahead and, you know, pretend to be a little bit miserable so we can relate, you know, that doesn't work. I mean, and it really does prevent the opportunity for someone who doesn't have that zest for life to be able to have it sparked within them.
Absolutely. You're super wise and eloquent, and it's a pleasure listening to how you put things. That is so true. Anita Morjani speaks to that about when we raise our energy field or vibrational frequency, it's entrains other energies up into that frequency as opposed to thinking that out of compassion or like you allude to, we don't want to make people feel worse about themselves, you know, if we're just so high on life and they're just really not. But it's not our obligation to go to the dark place, just like, you know, you light a candle, don't curse the darkness, and it just takes one match to illuminate a heck of a lot of darkness. I have another hero and enlightened leader, teacher, is Dr. Christiane Northrup, who's considered the pioneer of women's health. She wrote a seminal book considered the Bible of women's health called Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom about 30 or more years ago, and has written several books since then. She's a longtime OBGYN, practicing OBGYN, New York Times bestselling author, and I've been working on her book, The Wisdom of Menopause, but she talks about how, well, through the lens of menopause, at least, even though there are many opportunities for this, where we can shed those old narratives or where we are socialized, like you say, to just want to fit in or not disappoint people, and we out of no fault of our own wind up going down this path of leading somebody else's life, just wanting to live up to the image that our culture, our parents, our religion, et cetera, have projected for us. And if we're fortunate at some point, often sadly it's through pain or an illness or a physical crisis of some sort, where our soul finally claims against our what we'll listen, which is our body in pain, to say, hey, please break free. You're meant to save yourself. You're meant to love yourself. You're meant to put yourself first, and that is not selfish. And she said menopause is one of these gateways, and I practice traditional Chinese medicine as well, thanks to Dr. Nan Lu and Tatiana and Deb, my TCM family at tcmworld.org in New York City. But TCM looks at menopause called just cessation of menstrual symptoms. There aren't names in traditional Chinese medicine and diagnoses like there are in mainstream medicine, but menopause is considered the final big gateway of being able to be reborn. But all this to say that in putting ourselves first and letting our soul rejoice in life, like the worst that can happen, and I'm chuckling because I'm thinking of a line by Dr. Christiane Northrup. She said, what's the worst that's going to happen? You're going to disappoint some people? I'm like, okay, then just get used to that. That's okay. Why do we give our power away to all these other people, especially ones who are, as some cool writer said, living lives of quiet desperation or just projecting their misery, their alienation, their loneliness, their sorrow, their anger in ways that somehow make us feel like we have to feel guilty for not being there. So, if we can finally have the courage to love, say yes to ourselves first and know that the people who want to pay attention will gravitate toward it, and to not be angry or resentful or have expectations or be upset at the people who don't get it or try to dim our light or like you said, the cynic, when you said that word cynical about the many people who just grow cynical and bitter at life and don't expect it to sparkle and shine like it can. We just need to not give anything the power to manipulate our emotions and bring us out of our sense of grounding. So.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm pausing because I'll just keep on pirouetting off there.
That's okay. I love speech, so I mean, it's great. We're halfway through the show, so I want to take just a quick break. And then when you return, we'll continue talking about your book, and then I want to kind of go into a couple of the specific stories and you know, kind of get your take on you know, what the messages of the stories are, okay?
Oh, beautiful. Okay, thank you.
Great. Okay, everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back. Yeah, everybody, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break. Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder, we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to the more than 1,700 shows we have aired during the past 13 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, photography products and services, calendars, and greeting cards. There is also a link to our account at Fine Art America, where you can purchase items such as mugs, prints, pillows, and more. Our show is available as a free podcast on multiple platforms, such as iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, and Audible, with icons to each platform on our homepage. We are also available on social media platforms such as Facebook, X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Threads. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My special guest is Gretchen Astro Turner, and we're talking about her book, But I Digretch, Quirky Short Stories. And you can find out more by visiting Gretchen's website, which is godsagoodkisser.wordpress.com. Again, it's godsagoodkisser.wordpress.com, and there's no apostrophe in gods. So with that, Gretchen, we're back to the show.
Beautiful. Hello, friends and family. Everyone, every stranger is just a friend I haven't met yet, to quote in a Centurion from Sicily that I came across, who's living very robustly into her hundreds.
Yeah. So, beginning of the show, I usually ask people about the titles of the books, and so I want to ask that now. Now, as a writer, I know that coming up with a title for a book is probably second most important to its actual content. And then yours is memorable. And I think that's what, you know, a good book title does, is that once you hear it, you just don't forget it, you know. So tell us about how you came up with the title, But I Digretch.
Thank you. And I just want to say this is a thrill ride of a conversation, Robert. You're very articulate and plugged in and enlightened and a relaxed presence, and you make me feel at home and valued and listened to. So I really thank you so much for your demeanor and who you are and the opportunity for this conversation. That's a wonderful question. And it is, I have to shout out my wonderful friend, Juliana Wall. She in a stream of consciousness voicemail that she left me at one point, she found herself veering into a colorful anecdote or two, and when she was circling back to her point, she said, "Oh, but I digress." And from then on, we had a neologism that she coined, and I guess that got retained. And when I was plugging in a lot of different ideas for what to call my short story collection, all of a sudden, aha, it was that epiphany of, oh my gosh, this is perfect, because I'm one of those people who just loves to share, and there isn't an end line or a timeline or a need for structure or direction. It's just let's all share what feels natural. And so, especially for these short stories, they're meant to be enjoyed and not to get to the end of. So, and taking many, many different off-roads and detours of thought, it's all the splash and the color. It's all part of the journey of one's imagination. So, Juliana, I thank you for... And I hope it will stick. I hope it will be something that folks one day... You never know. I mean, Shakespeare didn't set out to be the most quoted writer of all time, and no one ever is. I did momentarily wonder if it would be pretentious or alienate some crowds, because I'm aware that but I digress is the expression that it is punning on, a wordplay off of, and that means, to anybody who might not know, just to deviate from the point when sharing something. You'll say, oh, but I digress. You know, I've just gone off on a tangent. So I was aware that many won't get it, or many might not. They might know the expression, but I digress, but don't necessarily see it in this, because it could look like degretch, I've had people say. But I realized I write literary fiction. This is not, it's adult. It's not erotica, but it's for adult demographic or mature teen. So it's sort of a signal too that there are some heavy themes. It's just it's intellectual in a lot of ways. I love words. My friends who know me know that I love sesquipedalian words, you know, I'll throw in a sentence or a word like that to cheekily and with risible fun evidence that I like big words. But I'm a big jokester. Now that I say that, I feel like singing the song. And I like big butts, and I cannot lie, just to kind of lighten everything. So I can.
That's all right. Yeah, you know, the idea of, you know, having that moment of pause of, you know, whether to use it. I had that the second book I did was called It's No Secret, Spirituality Bites, you know, and it was kind of about, you know, the idea of the secret and all that stuff, you know, and the fact is in that book, I just, you know, highlight some guests who have been on my show and what I've learned from them and different things that I have instituted in my life to make it better. So I just wanted to share those things with people. And of course, Spirituality Bites with a BITE for the acronym for the show. But also that double meaning of sometimes it, you know, it can bite you in the behind, you know.
I love that. I love that. And it's amazing you're bringing this up. Twofold. One, you said that's the second book that you wrote. What was the first one? So, yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit about your at least first two books, if not more. And then I have another follow-up question, though, to what you just said about the It's No Secret, Spirituality Bite. Which makes me laugh. I love that. That would make me pick it up. But, yeah, I want to follow that up after I hear about your other book, too.
Oh, yeah, well, my first book was published in 2012, and it was, probably in the 1990s, I had gone to an intuitive, you know, kind of wrapped up in that world a bit, And she told me that in 2012 I was going to write a book, it was going to be published, and blah, blah, blah. So, and of course, this was the 90s.
I'm sorry,
what the hell?
Well, I'm sorry to clarify, you went to that intuitive in 2012 or before then?
It was in 1995, I think.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay.
It was about
a project that I had, but she kind of veered off, you know, as they tend to do sometimes, and said that. And of course, you know, that was what. Anyway, in the intervening years, I tried to write a book. And now my background before entrepreneurship was corporate world. I was a management trainer in, you know, the restaurant and banking industries. And so for, you know, like 10 years, I tried to write the book, but every time I tried, it came out like a training manual. This is not the book that she was talking about. But one day, now every day I walk is part of my routine, you know, nature. I'm a nature photographer, so I always take my camera and do my walk and get myself balanced. And this one day.
I've seen a couple of your photos on Instagram, and they're compelling. I've seen some of the flower, I think wisteria maybe lately. But
go ahead.
I love your eye for beauty in nature.
Thank you. Just in one of those walks, the idea, and actually even the more specifically the ending of the book came to mind, and it was a process of 1 year, kind of for a full year I would walk, and then while I walked, I was, you know, kind of shown what to write, and I would go back to my, you know, back to the house, to the computer and write it. Not the typical kind of preparation many authors do in writing a book, like character development and, you know, and plot lines and all that kind of thing. It truly was, you know, walk and write. And on days where it rained or it was too cold and I couldn't walk, I thought, I don't need to walk to write. And so I sat down and I couldn't think of a thing. So, it was funny how that happened. So anyway, that was my first one. It's called Joy Potential, Where We Least Expect It.
Joy Potential, Where We Least Expect It?
Yeah, Where We Least Expect It. And it was...
I love that.
It was about, you know, that we have so many opportunities throughout the day to create joy and experience joy. And some of those moments... are quite unexpected, you know, and that recognizing that the more that we create, the more that we experience. And can, you know, and just to look for that every day.
My soul is gulping vigorously and nodding. I almost feel like I wish I'd been taking notes for so many of the things that you're sharing that I want to touch off on and build on, but that is glorious. And even... where you least expect it, it makes me think of there's three spiritual rules or principles or laws or axioms of traditional Chinese medicine. And again, this is all thanks to Dr. Nan Liu and Tatiana and Deb. I have to always give acknowledgement to the sources that enable me to be sharing it. There are no accidents. Everything happens for a reason. How can we see the good? How can we find the good? So that kind of underscores it's all about perspective. So the joy potential in everything, and often the calamities are the things that we think would be impossible to bear fruit of good or joy. That's the paradox often and the contradiction about life. So I love that. And I love your walking, is it zazen? I know there's a word for walking meditation, but it sounds like that's your muse. Like she was saying,
right.
Okay, I'm going to dance. We're in a partnership. It's a partner dance. And there's that's elegant and amazing. I love that. It speaks to what I was saying before, that nature is my cathedral. Maybe later we'll share more about, like, writing. Like you say, that might be an unorthodox or not super typical methodology or technique or habit, et cetera, of writing. But It's all about our personal journey and figuring out what is most natural and real for us, and evokes that spark of life, and in this case, writing or something we want to give back to the world. So that's amazing.
Go ahead. I was going to say, recognizing that, you know, when it comes time to expressing artistically, that, you know, following, quote, convention isn't really necessary. I mean, you know, that it's and actually sometimes can be an impediment to expression.
I love that you're saying that. I have a spiritual teacher who he's Dalip, definitely shout him out, but he, in the true spirit of a spiritual teacher, he has said, please shine your own light. He's quoted Buddha, to thine own self be true, shine your own lamp, but he said, don't listen to me, just, this is information for you to try on, experience it in your practical life, and then spit out what doesn't work for you. So I, you know, he invited me to wholeheartedly disagree. But just to try on things. So on that note, I used to be so dogmatic and have such perfectionism and be hyper-disciplined and hyper-tried various self-abnegation or self-denial or austerities. And I used to, like you say, there are these conventions that are given to us or practices. You name it, whether it's a spiritual path or what our goal is, there are pathways and almost infinite suggestions for how to go about reaching, i.e. a goal. And I know in my life I've realized I've needed to just break free of that rigidity and radically say yes to what works for me, even if it's not at all, or almost by virtue of having been so strict, when trying to force something, it's like no wonder that it's not going to work. You've got to, so what my spiritual teacher had said was try to think of it more as you're just brought to want to do yoga, or you're brought to want to sit in meditation because it's a natural outflow of what's coming out, instead of, okay, I have to sit like this, and are my legs right, and am I in lotus posture, and does my left leg go against my muladhara, or does my right leg, etc. He said, just, you know, breathe out and relax and do what works for Gretchy. So I love that you found walking hand in hand with nature. I can't find a better beloved to bring out your writing.
Yeah. So, and you know, the idea of timing. You know, with that particular one, you know, all of the, my previous attempts at, you know, writing the book, what ended up the contents of the book were things that had to happen, you know, in order for me to write about them. I mean, it was one of those cases where I had to live life in order to be able to get to that point to express, you know, what it was that I really wanted to say. So, you know, for people out there who try to force, you know, force their book or force this or force that, you know, it might be wise to recognize that maybe some life, part of life has to be lived first before that takes place.
High five. If we were there, I'd be high-fiving you all the time. This is so profound and perfect and exactly resonant with, what comes through is the truth for me, too. And that gets back to what I didn't take notes about, so my consciousness can sometimes forget. But did you mention that the intuitive name 2012 is the actual year, even though it was 1995 when you met with her? And then, quote unquote, it so happens that your book came out in 2012 after all those intervening years, as you say, needed to happen. You needed to go through certain, like the I forget the word, but you need to go through these experiences to alchemize right. them into the gold.
Yeah, so, I mean, in when she told me about that happening in the future, I did keep that 2012, you know, marker in mind, but what ended up happening is that, you try something for so long that it becomes like, okay, forget it, you know, it's just not going to happen. It had gotten to that point, you know, it was like, oh, whatever. But then the flash of insight, and this was truly kind of I was just a translator of what the story was to be told, you know, and it was great.
I love that. I translator of what needs to be told. I love that phrase. It makes me think of a line by Rumi that, the voice of God is silence, all else is poor translation. However, the voice of God is also so many forms of beauty, and we are the translators of it. So, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt midstream and into the building.
But you know what?
Profound way
of putting something. We've only got 8 minutes left, and I want to talk a couple of your stories. I love talking about me,
Before we even get to the, because this is so scintillating, and I'm learning so much and loving. I love connecting with people like you, where I truly can be my real self, and it's I don't want to say it's rare, but it's, I'm extremely grateful when there are people who speak the kind of language that I speak. So thank you. I wanted to quickly circle back to two things though about your writing. The BITE, the spirituality bites, that's such a, or what was it, something, the secret of spiritual, say that again, the title?
It's no secret,
right.
Because it was about the time that the movie The Secret came out, and all of the, and my point in this one was is that, so many of the wise men and women of history, have told us certain things that it's, basically a repackaging of some very, common knowledge. That we can implement in order to improve our lives.
I love it. All good things bear repeating. I mean, life is about affirmation. We can never say important things enough. So I love that. And you're exactly right about anyone who's on the spiritual path. You hear time and again that it is not for the faint of heart, that it basically will weed out those not ready because of how much it, quote unquote, bites and how hard it is. So, and then lastly, I noticed, your email, or maybe I shouldn't give your email address, but made me think about something with your, BITEMME is the beginning of it?
Yeah, I have actually two. One of them is biteradio.me.
And
the other one is BiteRadioMe@AOL.com.
But I love it because now you admit that it is wordplay, the play on words and the double entendre with the bite. That's very, very cool.
Yes, exactly.
I'm not just saying this, but I'm going to be picking up one or two or both of your books because it just, again, speaks my language, and I love it. I want to go through it now, so. I didn't do research ahead of time because I like to just be spontaneous when I'm talking to new people now. So the less I know, the more authentic and real it is. But so that's why I just wasn't aware of those two books yet.
Oh, absolutely. No problem. And, not in the same way. Now I'll do my research into, an individual's work, look at their website, kind of, get the lay of the land. But I won't listen to previous interviews, because again, I don't want to be, kind of guided by what was already done. I just wanted it to be kind of spontaneous. So,
but I love it.
That
high five.
Leads into a couple of stories. Okay. Now one of them, leave a light on for you. I believe it's the first story. In that particular one, You know, you had mentioned that you are early on that you had that romantic kind of draw to, you know, to kind of have that special someone. It seems like that was evident in that particular story. So in that one, first of all, a couple of questions. One is, you know, in that the character had a kind of a love-hate relationship with cars. You know, is that, and then they came out with another one of your stories, I think, about a car. Is that something that is a real-life reflection?
awesome. Certainly, a bunch of the stories are quite autobiographical in a super fictionalized way. First one, it's a lot of my writing, the ones of certainly with the love theme are kind of the idealized, romanticized version where we can make life happen the way we'd like it to go. But yeah, based on, just like you were saying, you needed to go through a lot of life before it was ready to be churned into language about life. That I drew from, I do have a little love affair with hotels and motels. My kind of subtitle of my website is Roadside Swami Motel. I love winter's snow, snowflakes, how each one is a crystalline, infinite, fractal, epic masterpiece of beauty. So I incorporate snow into that, that then leads to the hapless need for the person driving the, yes, Volkswagen with the smirks with cameo making rust on the tire hubs, leads to the car having its hapless, what happens to it, et cetera, pushing the arc of the narrative arc along. So it's all sort of versions of how I see myself and life, and I do have a love affair with sleep, and probably more so now, but not in the quote-unquote lazy way, where this speaks to how we need to dismantle and decode and interrupt those scripts that are actually harmful that we've learned, and such as, you know, you're lazy if you sleep too much, or you must be depressed, or you know, you need to get up early and be active, etc. I traditional Chinese medicine, another tenet is listen to your body, don't listen to your mind. Just listen to your body. Mm-hmm. There's so much wisdom that it's trying to tell you. So when you're tired, sleep. When you don't have enough rest, it's okay to sleep. It doesn't mean that you're a moral failure when you go to bed, but besides that, the dreams that we can have when we sleep, I mean, sleeping is the closest we'll get to going back to spirit and not having our minds be at the controls. So there's just such infinite possibility in sleep. And so I love the idea, I don't want to give it away, of having that, a magical reality. Just how you said your book finally came to you, or you were ready to bring it to fruition by the ending coming up first, and then as a writer, which Jim Croce had said, that he tends to think of endings and then back his stories into them, and that's kind of exactly how I tend to write as well. I have these momentous endings that to me have evoked shivers and are kind of like, holy God, oh my God, did that just happen? But then weaving a story that makes it absolutely plausible and evocative that it could happen. So I sort of had that idea of what I knew, how I knew I wanted this to end, and it was alive in my mind. It was just up to me to find, as another writer friend said, we love to stop the world to think of the perfect word. So in writing, we have to just put, or God, whatever you want to call it, inspiration, source, love, that infinite miracle that we get to be channels of is just saying, here, put me through you.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we're going to run over a little bit question. Is that okay? I mean, do you need to go?
Oh, sure. And I'm sorry about that. This has been just effortlessly fun conversation, so thank you.
and we can run over. I mean, I it's just stopped streaming, but so we can run over and it's still part of the show. But I just wanted to make sure you didn't have an appointment right now where you needed to get to.
Thank you for the consideration.
Okay. Well, because there were a couple more points I wanted to make on a couple of the stories before we wind it up. One of them was, it's called A Box of No Feelings, where Leaf, the character, kind of goes through a good deal of kind of self-examination. And it has a surprise ending. For me, it seemed like a surprise. It was kind of like the story was leading down a particular road with an anticipated outcome. And then when the outcome happens, it's like, what? Wait a minute. So in a way, and it was funny because when I finished it, my first thought was, is this would have been a typical Rod Serling Twilight Zone kind of story, that surprise ending. So, in that one, I mean, was that the intent to kind of lead down one path but end with a surprise, not bad the ending?
Oh my God, that is so perfect. It's like we're conjoined twins of consciousness because you got it perfectly. And I say that because of now that I've been blessed to have feedback by some other people and their takeaways, some didn't necessarily read it that way, or the ending is still a bit ambiguous for them. But how you just articulated it and characterized it is exactly what I was going for. Where,
okay.
Again, I don't want to give so much away, but
no, I didn't either.
It's just such a you were perfect. You were perfect. You just alluded and generally spoke to it, but didn't give anything away. But that's exactly what it was. Just sort of how my psyche works about life, and it is unbearably difficult. However, that's not the end of the sentence. It doesn't have to be the end of the sentence. And just like the synopsis says how life can be best understood through simile and metaphor and through figurative language, this was my way of symbolizing how, like, yes, life, as the Buddha's first noble truth, life is suffering, right, but ... then it's a matter of, oh my God, but while we're here, look at what else, what there also is, you know, and so paradox, contradiction, just making peace and making glorious love to the contradiction in actuality,
Yeah, absolutely. So, and now another one of the stories I just want to, touch on briefly was the one called Needlepoint. You talk about a bisexual trans individual, and then you also broached the BDSM, bondage, domination, so in that story, and was kind of really drawn into it. Number one, because I used to do CrossFit, so the idea of Needlepoint
cool.
And what Duncan was doing was like, okay, I get it. But tell us, my thought when reading that story at the very end, my thought was that it was a great story to look at those communities in a very non-judgmental way, in effort to kind of stir up some compassion. At least that's kind of how it came across to me. Was that kind of maybe what you were working for?
That's beautiful. Thank you so much for getting that. Absolutely. So this story is very much drawn from my real life. And in short, one of the loves of my life, we were together for a few years. I wound up, and he is bisexual and a drag queen and into BDSM and kink. And we had that relationship, and I was the dom, he was the sub. I'm careful. I'm maintaining privacy here, confidentiality,
right,
and
right.
Not giving anything away. I'm just, you know, in generally, this is what drew this out. And I wound up breaking his heart and then regretting it about a year or so later, and I desperately wanted him back, but it was too late. The bridge was burned. He did hang on and wait for me and was forgiving until finally I just never came around, and then he just had moved on. And at that point, this is what arose in my mind, to pay tribute to the eternal love and how deeply entwined and threaded together we will always be and share each other's hearts, but in the agony of how, you know, sometimes on this plane of existence, we're not able to reconcile everything. So we hopefully can just not nod to it, bow to it, and this was my way of giving a gift of what would be the ultimate act of, you know, and it gave me the opportunity to put the marginalized or disenfranchised populations such as the trans community or the drag queens or kings, LGBTQ, IA, just in general, kink, BDSM, folks that are just so often misunderstood and then become judged and then ridiculed and condemned, etc. So I wanted to absolutely say, hey, just because you don't relate or understand, don't do it. Just don't do it then. You know, it's none of anyone's business how someone else wants to live if it works for them. And it's beautiful. That's what the tapestry of life is about. So all these illusions and, you know, metaphors woven in. so thank you for getting that.
Well, you know, and again, it was one of those stories at the end. I just felt, you know, there was this surge of compassion. And you know, and I loved the non-judgmental approach, because too often, you know, the marginalized communities, the first reaction to who they are, what they do, is one of judgment, you know, and, you know, to me, it just shouldn't be that way from my perspective. So
I love it. I love it. Thank you. Thank you for having that attitude and that compassion and that understanding of the unity within the diversity.
And the last thing I want to say is that you have a wonderful ability to turn a phrase. You know, you're...
thank you. Well, right back at you. This is a pleasure to chat. This is such a two-way street.
Thank you. Well, you know, early in the show when you mentioned, you know, approaching your interviews with like a kind of a popping of champagne, and there was one in one story, it says, excuse me, do you have a timeless? In that particular one, when you're on a train across from a woman, you use the phrase, you acknowledge how eloquent you found the voice in her eyes, you know, and you know, I just love the mixing, you know, of voice, sound, you know, in coming from the eyes, you know. So, I mean, it, to me, that was, I just love the imagery that that presented.
Well, thank you. And how I framed this in the beginning, where I would go back and read my short stories as if they were new, as if I was not the writer, so everything was novel and coming to me fresh, in you articulating that sentence just now, I got chills from the phrase that came out of me. Just, I needed to articulate how eloquent the voice in your eyes are. I mean, God, yeah. So much messaging and truth and communication is unspoken and invisible and soundless and in a look. Jean Paul Sartre has a whole story woven on the loom of just the look of, we just want to gain the look, the interest of another through the look. It's all telling in the look. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah,
thank
absolutely.
You.
Well, Gretchen, this has really been a delight, truly. I've enjoyed our conversation, and I'm sure we could go on and on. But now I did send a friend request on Facebook, and there's John there, so, you know, hopefully we can follow each other's journeys. And thank you for your time. This has really been a treat, and I really did enjoy reading your book and the stories.
Thank you, Robert. And to sign off genuinely as well, I love this conversation. I am going to be getting now both of your books, and even before I've read them, I'll be putting Amazon reviews on. And I don't volunteer this, but now that I've chatted with you and I realize just what kind of soul you are and the light that you're bringing and how intelligent and wise you are, and now that I do have a first book out, I see how important it is and how touched I am when people put up reviews for me, so I'm volunteering that I'm going to be doing that just as a thank you for this conversation and who you are. And, of course, we'll be following. I'll continue to be following. I'll go on Facebook right after this and connect, so... Thank you with all my heart. Sweet.
You're very welcome. And I'll return the favor by to do my Amazon review of your book, too, because it is deserving of a 5-star rating.
Thank you. Thank you. And enjoy your work, your walks with Mother Nature, and just all that, the life that you're living. It's such a joy to be on the journey of love with you and with everybody, but especially when we can feel understood, you know. So thank you.
You're very welcome.
With the Ziglar line, I hope you and everyone is wishing you smiles so widely you could eat a banana sideways.
I like that. Well, see that? Talking about turn of phrase.
Ziglar.
There you go.
Bingo. Well, high five. Thank you again, Robert.
You're very welcome. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Gretchen Astro Turner. We've been talking about her book, But I Digress, Quirky Short Stories. Again, you can find out more by visiting Gretchen's website, which is godsagoodkisser.wordpress.com. And that's godsagoodkisser.wordpress.com. And there is no hyphen in God's, so just it's all one word. And everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to BikeRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To become a show follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/BikeRadioMe and click on the follow link. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at BikeRadioMe. Be sure to visit our website at www.BikeRadio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.